If you'll remember, we talked to the prosecutor of the Jeffrey Dahmer case that occurred probably when you and I were both in our early teens, maybe. And so we've interesting cases go back a long way. You know something I'd like to talk about? Have you seen this Manson thing where some his lawyer at one point said that Manson told him that he had killed several other people before he went out and killed Sharon Tate and those others?
Well, he didn't actually kill Sharon Tate, right? It was his people that killed Sharon Tate. He wasn't even there.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
No, he actually wasn't even there. They were, you know, he was convicted because he was the mastermind, I think.
You know, Vince Bugliosi is the prosecutor, and he hadn't wanted to talk about
it. I was
going to
say, you've
much.
Tried to get him before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a wimp.
Right. He's scared of us.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
On this show, we try to do a variation of cases, from local cases to those who are of interest nationally that have been widely exposed through the media, as well as state cases, and that's what we're going to feature this morning. Ray, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Tell us about our guests and what we're going to talk about.
Well, Jackie Steele is the Commonwealth Attorney in Laurel and Knox counties, south, and he's been the Commonwealth Attorney there since when, Jackie?
2008.
And he's a... I don't know that I trust him because he's about 6'6", and I never did trust anybody that's over 5'9". Yeah, yeah. He's got an interesting murder case that he handled down there that I think is I think everybody would be interested in hearing. But first, let's talk a little bit about your jurisdiction, Jackie.
Good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
You've been the Commonwealth Attorney since 2008. Now, tell us about your jurisdiction.
We're a rural population. I've got Laurel and Knox. Laurel's about 60,000 people, and Knox is about half of that, about 30,000 people. So I've got jurisdictions about 90,000 people in the two counties, rural, farmland, working, not a big city like we have here today in Lexington.
That's right. Tell me about the kind of crimes that you... First of all, I want to know about the problems that you have going between two different counties. What kind of problems does that create, and how do you deal with it?
Well, the biggest problem is, as we always go back to funding, but we're getting cut out of funding for travel. So the biggest problem is getting people to go down there and paying their own dime to cover courts and appearances. And, of course, when law enforcement calls in Knox County, I'm available just like I am in Laurel County. So we load up and go down there when we need to. So it can, you know, it's 45 minutes from London to get down there next to the Bell County line, Karen Blondell's area. But that's still my territory, and I head down that way, KJ Mountain, and we'll be out there on the side of a mountain somewhere, and it takes a full day out.
What kind of crimes are you, you know, each county has their own kind of issues as it relates to crime. A lot of them are the same as everybody else's, but a lot of them are sort of distinctive. What kind of issues do you deal with?
I think we all suffer and struggle with the drug crimes, and I think as the territory changes, the drug of choice changes also. And in the mountain area where Rick Barton is out over in Pike County, it's more pills. In my area, it's pills and methamphetamine both. And even Northern Kentucky and West Kentucky, you have heroin problems. So it's always drugs, but my drug of choice for our drug addicts are pills and methamphetamine.
You know, Jack, locally, we see pills, and we don't see lots of meth, but we do see heroin's making a big move because the pill pipeline, the laws that are trying to restrict the pills coming into Kentucky is working to some extent, and as a result, these people are looking for drugs that will take its place, and heroin is making a big move.
We just got our first heroin case, and probably the first time I've seen heroin in a court, you know, in a court case in 5 years, and we got it about 2 months ago.
That's because we're doing such a good job on the pills, right?
I think it's a direct correlation, and that's part of the problem. When we were talking about this, we were told by the experts, the people who do the drug counseling, they said when you cut the opiates out, which is what the pills were, the Oxycontins and hydrocodones. When you cut those out, heroin is the most natural choice for them to go to. And they said, you're going to see an increase in the heroin. And lo and behold, I just saw my first heroin case about 2 months ago.
Well, we're seeing lots and lots of them. Also with us this morning, Jack, is Lynn Pryor. And Lynn is the Commonwealth's attorney in Christian County, Hopkinsville, and she has just been elected as the president of our organization, the Commonwealth Attorneys Association.
Congratulations.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning.
And she's been a Commonwealth attorney for a while down there and does a great job. She's been one that has pushed and pushed and pushed for better gang legislation in our state, and we've gotten some of it passed, but after all, when you're dealing with the legislature, don't forget there are no prosecutors in that group.
Right.
Anybody that does any criminal work is a criminal defense lawyer.
What would you like to see done that we're not doing?
Well, the main thing is just to enhance the sentencing for crimes that are committed in furtherance of the gang activity. We don't really have any way to track gang members from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and that's a big thing, too, because we see them crossing from Tennessee into our county, but from our county into other counties across the state, too. So really just having some way to identify them, to track them, and to sentence them according to the violent and really serious crimes that they're committing across at least our county. And
I was going to say, that's a problem in Christian County?
It's a huge problem down there.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, Jackie, you and I were talking, and you told me about some case in which a pizza delivery fellow in your jurisdiction was murdered. Why don't you tell us some facts about the case? Just tell us about the facts.
Sure. When you asked me, Ray, this one come to my mind first, because it's one of those that as prosecutors we always have a case that we always think about. It's always with us, and this is one of the first ones I had that there was no relationship in regards to the victim and the defendant in the murder. It was just an absolutely senseless murder. And the only thing that determined who was going to die was who was the pizza guy that picked up that box of pizza for delivery. And there was no relationship whatsoever. But the defendant in this case, Christopher Wages, and a girlfriend met at a rehab facility. She graduated the rehab facility. He checked himself out, and they went to live in a shack, really, is what you could call, behind her grandmother's house. And one night he decided he just had enough, not having any money, and decided he was what he called punk a pizza man. Call the pizza, make an order. They call, get directions. And the female gives directions as to where they're at. And the long and short is, as they get there, Christopher's waiting behind the trailer, and pizza man knocks on the door. He comes around and has a wooden baseball bat, and the first hit is across his arm, and just breaks his arm literally in two, you know. And so at that point it's over, but Christopher, being individual as he was, didn't stop there. He kept beating him to the point where there was no doubt that he's the one that did it, because a female could not inflict those type of blows. And he killed killed Mr. Rowe, our victim. And it was just a senseless, absolutely one of the most brutal crime scenes I've seen, because it was, when you see a gunshot wound, there's blood, when you look at it, when somebody's broken a wooden baseball bat hitting somebody with it, an amount of blood, it's just a completely senseless and brutal act.
Absolutely. Okay, brutal. Well, tell us, let's talk a little bit. Far too often in criminal cases, the forgotten people are the victims and the survivors of homicide victims. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Rowe.
Mr. Rowe was, by all accounts, just a fun-loving guy.
How old was he?
Mr. Rowe would have been, he was in his early 30s. Mm-hmm. He's had a brother who's a doctor, mother that was a great family. Mr. Rowe, his brother, the doctor, would say, my brother was always smarter than me, and he could have done anything he wanted to do, but he didn't want He just didn't want to be a doctor. He didn't want to be a lawyer. He wanted to live life day by day and enjoy everything and be an enjoyment to everybody around him. And that's actually how we got alerted to it, because he worked for the pizza delivery, Papa John's, that he worked for. They called the police to tell us we've not, that delivery guy hasn't come back. They actually searched with the police and drove around in their cars looking for him. That's the kind of guy he was.
They thought so highly of him.
Yes. I mean, they thought the world of him. Something had to be wrong. And so they were actually driving through our county looking for him. Of course, they had the last known place where he made the delivery. Of course, they stole his car. So when you drive by, you didn't see his vehicle. They'd actually drug his body behind the trailer, and you couldn't see it from the roadway. So they were out joyriding, so to speak, and they actually popped the people that were employed there. They actually saw the car parked at a speedway where they dumped it and called the police and said that's where they're at. And we evidently very quickly in short order found the two.
Did it have some sort of an indication that it was a Papa John's vehicle like they do? Or
he'd removed the signage off the top, but there was a Papa magnetic. I think they use magnets. Papa John's on top, and they'd removed that, so there wasn't anything on top of it when they found it at the speedway on North Main. But it was obviously his car. There was a hubcap missing. They were very specific about what he drove. Had a hubcap missing, and so they knew exactly whose car it was when he saw it.
Okay, so the police are called, and so tell us about the investigation. Who did the investigation? What police agency? And tell us about the investigation.
Well, we have in Laurel County, we have a major crimes task force, Ray, and that has state police, sheriff's department, and city police. I have two detectives each assigned to the task force. And it is on a rotation basis as to who the lead officer is. So in this case, the lead officer is in the sheriff's department. But all the state police, city police, and sheriff all worked it. So as soon as the call came out, naturally it's a missing persons, and we all know how much attention those get, especially for a grown man who's at the end of his, really close to the end of his shift at a pizza delivery.
What time of day or night was
this? This was at nighttime, and I'm not mistaken, it was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So it was about the end of his shift. They just kind of put out a, look out for this vehicle, see if they can find it. When they find the vehicle at Speedway, that's when things really changed. And they sort of pulls up. Yeah, that's the vehicle. At which point in time, he sees two people getting in a car with an individual. He just says something's wrong about this because it's so late at night. And he kind of follows them out, pulls the vehicle over. The guy driving says, I don't know who these people are. They just asked me right over to get a ride to the hotel. So he says, I want you guys to step out. And when he separates the driver, he says, something's wrong here, man. There's something. This guy, I think, may have blood on him. I didn't realize it, but I think he's got blood on him. So they pull him out, and of course, his story is, I've been in the woods. I've been walking from over in the mountains. I've been walking a parkway back. I was in the woods. I don't know what this is on me. Of course, it's blood all over his clothes. At that point in time, it becomes who did it, him or her.
Taking a break, 253-5959, Touchstar 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Friday morning, Forensic Friday, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson in the studio with us this morning. And also with us this morning, Commonwealth Attorney representing Laurel and Knox County, Jackie Steele, and Christian County Commonwealth Attorney Lynn Pryor. Ray?
Jackie, so the police have separated the female and the male, and they're both saying I didn't do it, he did it, or she did it. So how did they go about finally decide who did what?
Well, when you looked at his story was that she was the one that brought it all up. He made the first hit across the arm, and then she began to beat him. Naturally, she didn't have any blood on her. Her story was very consistent with the evidence we collected at the scene regarding blood splatter evidence, her location, where she was at when this happened.
You mentioned something interesting, blood splatter evidence.
Yes.
Talk to us about that, and what can that show?
Well, in this case, it showed, obviously, he was hit with a wood bat across the head, and it caused severe damage, of which there was blood splatter. And the arcing motion of the blood as it trailed from his head on the bat and then slung across the side of the shack trailer they were in, it told us velocity and angle. It told us that he was on the ground when he was being hit. It wasn't as if somebody walked up behind him and hit him while he was standing up. Many of the blows were done while he was on the ground. which all was consistent with her version of the events as they occurred.
Was it on the porch or inside the shack?
It was actually outside. There wasn't even a porch to the shack, and I call it a trailer, but it was really a pull behind that you would hook up to your car and pull
travel
behind,
trailer.
Travel trailer, and they put a little underpinning around it, I guess, where they were living in it.
So the blood and so on was on, was it in the grass or was it on?
There was blood on the grass, blood on the underpinning of this little travel trailer they kind of put up on the travel trailer. They then drug the body. Mr. Rowe was a large man. He was probably a little over 300 pounds, 325 pounds. So they couldn't pick him up and get him in the trunk of the car is the only reason we actually found his body probably. Otherwise, they'd have disposed of the body. But as so they pulled him back behind the trailer. So his version of the events was that he hit him on the arm and then she hit him. Well, we knew that the force used to inflict that kind of damage, she wouldn't even been. I mean,
did you have an expert that said that?
We had, of course, body went up for autopsy in regards to any other injuries that there were. They testified in regards to the amount of damage done to the skull, that it would have, you know, it was extreme amount of velocity used to inflict that kind of, especially with a wooden bat. You know, a metal bat wouldn't take as much, but a wooden bat. And then to break a wooden bat, you know, you don't see many 115-pound little leaguers breaking wooden baseball bats.
Where did you find the bat? Where was it?
The bat was actually behind the trailer also. They kind of tossed it in pieces. But they tossed it back there. They found the bat also. So they're separated. And her story, her demeanor is somebody that is can't believe what just happened to me. And she's shaking. You know, she's upset. This is, you know, when it was too late, when I realized what he was going to do, he was already walking out with the ball bat. By the time his pizza guy's going to get here, it wasn't on anything I could do. He drug me outside by the hair and made me watch this guy take his last breaths. What told me he wanted me to know what it was to see a person take their last breath. She's very emotional while she's telling this story. He's very, when he's giving his version of events, he's very calm. He's not upset. He's a cold-blooded killer. And so it very quickly, through the interview process, we realized kind of what was going on.
Now, it said something about this guy having a tattoo down his arm with faces on it, and then he had mouthed off in the jail, as they seemed to do, that those faces in his tattoo were people that he says he killed. What was that all about?
Well, we tried to track that down, and of course, he kind of hopped here and there, all over the state, other states. We just never could pin down who, you know, of course, he never told anybody names for us to go on, but we couldn't find anybody that would represent, but that was just his demeanor, even in jail, after he's in there on a murder charge, all these other people I killed.
Had he ever been in jail before?
He'd been in and out as a drug addict, but had never been in for a violent crime before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, all right, so what, he's charged with murder.
He's charged with murder. She's ultimately charged with tampering physical evidence for helping dispose of the body. They actually got a little more than $200.
And $200.
$200. $200. Stole the vehicle. And naturally, when you've got $200 and you're two drug addicts, where do you go? You go buy more pills. So we tracked them to a drug dealer who we've put in prison since then.
So that was a rehab success.
Yeah. That was a great rehab success, which we see on a constant basis, unfortunately. So we tracked him to one drug dealer's house and then tracked him back to Speedway and was able to put him in each location. But due to the fact that even if she was scared, she still helped move the body. She was obviously partaking in any benefits of the robbery also with the drugs. She was charged also, but he was charged with the murder. Danny Evans was the Commonwealth attorney. Me and I worked the case, but talking to him that we
So he's the guy that is charged with a murder that occurred in the course of a robbery in the first degree.
Yep.
What does that make it?
That makes it a
capital offense.
That makes
capital
it offense. A death penalty eligible crime. It's an aggravated murder because it is accompanied by what we call an aggravating circumstance. So he's charged with that. Now, so did he? And he ended up pleading guilty, right?
He did, yes.
Mm-hmm. And to, so other word, he didn't plead guilty to the death penalty.
No, he did not. We did file our notice to seek the death penalty on him. We went through the court process, and about 8 months or so after the process started, he came to us. His attorney came to us and said, "You know, my guy would like to plead guilty. Obviously, doesn't want to take the death penalty, but would plead guilty to life without the possibility of parole."
All right. Now, how do you go about making that decision? Well, to either allow that or to just go to trial?
Well, we first thing we did is we brought the family in to discuss what was going on with them so that they understood. And we explained to them the death penalty process, and we explained the process if he was to plead guilty without life without the possibility of parole. And in the death penalty process, you have to advise them that they're never over. And you know this as well as anybody, right? A death penalty case is never done. There's death penalty cases that two common attorneys before me, Tom Handy, tried. The murder occurred in 1989. He's on death row, and there's still pleadings in Sixth Circuit now.
That's Foley?
No, that was Ronnie Bowling. Foley was just a couple years after that. He's on death row also. You know, I think there's four people from Laurel, Knox County on death row, and none of them have been put to death.
Of course not. You remember what's your comment? The leading cause of death of people on death row is old age. Yeah, we've got two from Lexington, Halverson and Willoughby, who have been on for almost 30 years.
That's right.
30 years. Yeah.
So you're explaining to the family, this is never going to go away.
The process, you know, if we go to trial, there's going to be appeals. And on these death penalty cases, they're going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, and then they may send them back. Maybe 8, 10 years later, we got to do it again. You just never know what's going to happen in the course of a jury trial. And if we take a plea, it's over. You know, it theoretically, it's done. He's waived any right to appeal, and he's never going to get out. And that was ultimately the decision the family came up with, and we did too.
Excellent. We're taking a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590.
Is to charge the crime as the law requires and allow our community, our jury, to make the decision about the appropriate penalty. And that's what would happen, whether they give the death penalty or whether it's life without parole or anything less, is the jury's decision. We may not like it, but it's their decision to make, and we accept it and live with it. That's just the way it works. And so in this instance, I can remember, in Steve Nunn, he came to us for the same thing with the idea of, look, we'll plead guilty and accept a life without parole sentence, which means he's going to die in prison. And so we talked to the family, Diana Ross, and it was going to be a character assassination anyway, and they wanted it to go away. And what do you get out of a life without parole sentence? You basically, you don't have to go through the 150,000 years of appeals on those things. And you know he's going to be in prison. However, there's always, and Jackie will deal with this, because on that case, this guy's going to say, just a minute, my lawyer led me down the path. And so they'll claim that his lawyer was ineffective. And that's what will happen. That's just what happens. So any rate, it's the juries make the decision in Kentucky, and it's the way it ought to be.
Jackie, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
And Lynn, thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ms. President, thank you, Ray.
See you next time.